welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 477. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Rick Cowley.
Hello.
On the day which I'm reliably informed is Friday, but to me feels like Thursday, where I'm generally losing days, Rick. The only thing that's reminding me of what day it is when someone occasionally pops up and says, should we do the podcast now? I'm like, why would we do that? It's Sunday afternoon. I'm starting to think that not working in an office surrounded by people and clocks and stuff is starting to make me go strange.
Yay.
You seem to keep a handle on it, Rick. How do you manage it? What's your technique?
I have somebody else in my life who has a more regular routine than me and goes out every day to lectures and stuff and then comes back.
And flicks you in the head and says, Thursday, by the way.
Yeah.
I should get my wife to do that to me, just occasionally give me a kick. And as I've said before, but the only time I ever reliably knew which day it was when I was in school and we had to write the date at the beginning of the page on every little, like, whatever project we were doing that day. And then, and only then, did I officially know what day it was. After that, it's just been one massive non-stop, I was going to say day, disappointment.
I think that's just adult life, isn't it?
Yeah. Sounds like a drag, but no, come on. We've been playing games. It's not all doom and gloom, is it? It's all right. To the tune of new games coming out this week, including things like Snakebird Primer, Rolling Sky 2, Castles of Burgundy, Jack Quest, and others. Some good stuff on Switch we'll be talking about. And there's a bit of news information involving the frankly hilarious price of Resident Evil games appearing on the Switch. We've got Cultist Simulator coming to mobile and more. So let's get to it right now. The news. We'll start with some mobile news, specifically Cultist Simulator, which is going to be coming onto mobile sometime this spring. Now, you did the story for this one, Rick, and this has got a bit of pedigree to it, isn't it? The folks behind it.
The company behind it is called Weather Factory, and it's co-founded by Alexis Kennedy, who was also one of the co-founders of Fail Better, who did Fallen London and Sunless Seas and Sunless Skies.
Which are rad.
Which are really cool narrative adventures. And then a former staffer at Fail Better, Lottie Bevan, who worked on all of those games as well as a writer, I think. I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, so it's just those two working together making this one game. So their first game that they've made, Cultist Simulator. I've never actually played it, but it describes itself as a roguelike narrative card game. And basically you are building up your own cult and raising the gods and trying to create the apocalypse and get everyone to love you as you do it.
Which is great. It's like you're playing the enemies in a Call of Cthulhu campaign.
Yes.
Raising the cult. I'm looking at a wee video of it now. This has been out on Steam for a bit. Apparently sold over 200,000 copies, and that's why it's coming over now to Android and iOS. What they do very well, because I've played like Sunless Seas and Fallen London, specifically I played on mobile. They're very good at that flavor text stuff. What they write, the stuff that pops up in boxes and delivers the story, which is how most of their stories are told, these lot.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good writing. They manage to convey a good sense of atmosphere in very few words, which is important rather than just giving you like 25 paragraphs of stuff. They can give you a little bit of flavor text and you really get a sense of the world and what they're talking about and who this character might be and that sort of thing. So I'm up for this, especially if it's got weird Cthulhu overtones. We don't have an actual specific release date, do we?
No. We do know that it will be 30% off when it launches, so it's going to be $7 or £7 normal price.
Okay.
But it'll be £5 or $5 for the first week or so.
Gotcha. And if you are super keen, you can pre-register on Google Play and get email notes for the iOS release. We've got the links on PG, so go over there and have a look if you want to get involved. This will probably be quite good, because they are quite good.
Yes.
So, away from new games and onto old games gouging you, Resident Evil games are coming on to Switch. We've talked plenty about Square Enix gouging you for old games. My word, Capcom, they've been looking over Square Enix's shoulder and they've gone, ha, it's £18 for an old game. Well, have this, you bastards. So they have announced that the Resident Evil games, specifically Resident Evil 0, Resident Evil HD, and Resident Evil 4, are all coming to the Switch shop. Should I say that they are already on the Switch shop?
They are available for pre-order on the Switch shop. They are coming out on May the 25th, I think.
Okay, okay.
Sometime in May for certain.
And they are all appearing for £29.99 for the three, which actually, you know, when I look at it, that's not too bad. Because if they charged that for each individual one, that would be proper.
No, they are charging that for each individual
one. Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, Capcom! Wow.
£90 for three games.
Three games, which you could probably pick up for a tenner each, max.
Yeah.
Like, you get. I definitely got Resident Evil Zero for about £6 off PSN. That's mad. Like, yeah. I know everything costs a bit more on Switch. Quite a lot more in some cases. But £30 for the old remasters of the old games?
Like HD and Zero are both 17 years old this year. And they're charging £30 for them again. No one's paid full price for those games in a long, long time.
They did the HD remake in 17 years ago.
Yeah, it's the GameCube version.
Oh, my word. Oh, I suppose they upscaled it for the... I think the HD one, they did upscale for 1080.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure, for when it came out.
So, like, the core graphics and game and stuff is just the GameCube version of Resident Evil.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which has been re-released on basically every console already.
Hmm. Yeah, so I think Resident Evil 4 still goes for around about £15 on PSN on the more expensive ends, but then sales will happen, it'll get cheaper. But even like hardcore Resi fans, Capcom fans, and Switch fans who will defend the higher pricing of the Switch console games, because I guess they bought the console and they're committed now, so they have to stick with it. But, you know, we just expect it to be a bit more pricey. Like, wow, with this. This does feel like properly exploiting the fan base, or just the knowledge that people will go ahead and buy it at this price.
Mm. I think that there must be some sort of assumption that people wouldn't want to buy all three. But, of course, they would.
Yeah, like, if no, that doesn't... It just seems a bit brutal.
Yeah.
I was going to say how long they stay at that price might vary, but then the eShop, while there are some sales, it's not quite as fluid price-wise as the other stores.
No.
Nintendo stuff in general tends to hold its price, as we've talked about before. And even the digital stuff, while there are sales from time to time, it's not like... With the PSN and Xbox Live, there seems to be a sale every other day.
Mm.
There's some sale going on at some point. And that's not really the case with the eShop. So just wow. Is all I have for this, really. Do you want to play it on the move that badly?
I wouldn't pay £30. I would like to play Resi 4 again. It's been a long time since I played through it, and I would love to play it, you know, on the go and just have it there and go, oh, I'll dip into some Resi for a bit, but not for £30.
The pre-orders are out there, I think, what did we say? 21st? May 21st?
Yeah.
Right, okay. That's when they're all appearing. So that's Resident Evil 0, 1, technically 1, and 4. If you have a spare £100 lying around. Oof. What was the other thing? There was something else that was coming out on mobile that...
Stardew Valley is coming to Android on March 14th.
This is good news, because it's been out on iOS for a bit. The review we gave it, I think it was an 8 out of 10, which we really liked. All the features were there. It was all lovely. It didn't have the multiplayer aspect yet, but it was all still good and groovy. The only issue was that there was some niggly stuff with the combat, but it was iOS only. So 14th of...
March. So, literally 2 weeks today.
Oh, sweet. All right. Yeah, so definitely keep your eyes peeled for that one. And also in a game that's coming from mobile and going on to Switch, Motorsport Manager is going to be coming to Switch on March 14th. Now, this is a franchise that we've followed throughout its years. We're up to the third one now. It's a really, really good series.
Yeah.
And I'm not especially into management games, but I find them very playable. Whenever I've done like video reviews for at least the second one and the third one, maybe all three. And every time I've sat down and played them, because you do have to put a good few hours in to get anything worth capturing in these games, because it takes a while. They are so beautifully presented. They give you that feeling of obviously managing your garage and being in charge of your racing season and making your choices and that. But it's not like just a dry list of boring text. You do get a very, very slick interactive presentation, and tuning the cars is fun, and the way everything moves around, it does feel like you're interacting with something, I hesitate to say high tech, But you know what I mean? It doesn't feel like you're like updating an MS-DOS page.
No, it looks very slick. A lot of work has been done on the presentation and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not as dry as Football Manager, for example.
No, which is the other end of the spectrum. But maybe that's what people like. They like the Excel spreadsheet look, and that's what they're after, because, you know, just give me the details. Give me the numbers. Give me the stats. This is a bit more visual, which I appreciate as a person who likes a little bit of that. And the other thing they did very well is simulating the races themselves.
Yes.
Which in some, you know, some Football Manager games, you don't see the match. You just like press click and then it just jumps on a page. It's like, right, the match has happened. This is what happened.
Yeah.
Or you just see the occasional stat pop up. In this one, the race kind of takes place. You get a full elevation of the racetrack and your vehicle zooming around the track is represented as a little dot. But you get to see the full race play out and you can track it around and move the camera. And again, really nice, slick thing that makes you just feel like it's happening. It gives you that connection to the sport that is apparently taking place underneath all the jargon.
Mm.
I think it presents that really, really well. So, and the third one was the slickest of the lot.
Yeah.
So this is going to be coming to a new version of the first game, I think, or a new version of the game in general.
I asked the devs because it was unclear in the messaging, but this is a sort of expansion of the third game.
Okay.
But beefed up for Switch. So I think the main interesting difference is, as you were saying about the races, you kind of just watch a dot. This will have full 3D cars racing around on the tracks.
Oh.
So you'll get to see it's even more visual than before.
Okay.
And it'll have a new track in it, which I can't remember. It's based in New Zealand, that's it. And there'll be a nighttime Singapore race. There's also a new edit mode, which allows you to customize the names of everyone on your team, their personalities, your liveries, your team name, everything like that is all customizable as well.
Okay.
But underneath all that, basically, it is the same as Motorsport Manager 3, which I reckon is probably the best in the series anyway.
Yes, so, it is. And
I think there'll be new controls for the Switch as well. So it'll still have touchscreen controls because it's based off the mobile version. But if you are using Joy-Cons or playing on a big screen, it will have like actual button controls that map to different commands kind of thing, rather than having to like point and select as some games do.
Gotcha. All right, then. I think it'll just be called Motorsport Manager.
Yes.
They'll default to that. They won't put a 3 because it won't make sense on the Switch, maybe. But yeah, again, March 14th for that one. And obviously, you can get the MM3 mobile on Android and iOS if you want to go and have a look at it and you haven't checked it out already. It's good. And I'm saying that about a management game. So, you know, it's true. Moving away from collecting racing trophies to collecting the Pokemon, which is how it's pronounced, by the way. That's what the little umlaut is at the top there. That's what that means. Pokemon. There was another Direct, wasn't there, from Nintendo?
Yes. There was a short 7-minute Direct to announce that the Switch games are coming out later this year, and they are called Pokemon Sword and Pokemon Shield.
Okay. Pokemon Hair and Haircut. Pokemon Belt and Braces.
Belt and Braces would be amazing.
They're running out of little partnership things. But yes, they've done Sun and Moon and blah, blah. So yeah, Sword and Shield for this
one. Sword and Shield and the inevitable... I've seen a meme going around of the third one when they do their full-on re-release thing will be Pokemon Gun, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, Pokemon Reloaded. So as a person who has played some Pokemon, but I am not like a Pokemon person, an aficionado or anything, I've had a look at the news, I've had a look at the info, I've looked at the rundown... And this looks like another Pokemon game.
Yes.
Am I wrong?
That is a good thing. You are not wrong.
Just the same thing again with a different name?
No. It will have different elements to it and a new environment to wander around. It's set in the region of Galar, which looks to be based on the UK, which is really interesting. And I've seen people are like theorizing that the map that they showed in the trailer is actually just sort of like a stylized version of the UK but flipped upside down. So we're kind of like, people are thinking you'll start in Scotland, as it were, and then travel south down the country.
So we're going to be collecting Pokemon and then kicking them out of the country where they belong. How dare, coming over here, hiding in our bushes. Sorry, a little bit of Brexit there.
It's not like Pokemon Let's Go, which brought in elements of Pokemon Go. So you will be fighting random Pokemon in the wild, and you will still be going around, going to gyms, trying to be the best in the world, that kind of thing. There will be a whole raft of new Pokemon. They've only announced 3 so far, the starter Pokemon, who are... I can't remember the names. I think it's Grookey, who is the grass-type monkey, Scorbunny, who is a fire-type rabbit, and
Sobble.
Sobble, yes. It's a stupid name.
That's the one that everybody latched onto was Sobble.
Because it looks shy and has anxiety.
Yeah.
And so immediately the internet went, I identify with this.
And it's like halfway between hobbling and sobbing. And somehow that's what it seems to conjure for me. So everyone's just gone, ah, it's the most tragic Pokemon.
But yeah, the developers have said that they're trying to make it both accessible for new players, but in-depth and interesting enough for returning fans.
They always say that about Pokemon.
And they're saying it's going to be the best Pokemon experience yet and all that jargon. But it does actually look really cool. It looks like the camera's a bit closer to the character than before, so it's not the usual top-down experience.
Mm.
And like you can sort of freely move it to look around the environments, which I think will be really interesting because there's lots to see, and like they've clearly paid a lot of attention to the world and what you're going to be seeing in that. And I am very excited for it. I think it's going to be great.
The internet was slightly split on this one, where the diehards going like, more Pokemon, I will take more Pokemon, just give me more of your Pokemon, thank you. But I also saw some people being like, you know, this is just the same thing again. Slightly different camera angle. Like, how many times can they keep hammering this thing out? Infinitely, apparently.
Still makes millions upon millions of dollars. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Apparently. Okay. So that is going to be coming out around about the end of this year is what they said, wasn't it?
Yeah, late 2019.
Okay. All right, then. So Sword and Shield coming your way. Sobble. Out and about this week, let's lead with one of the more high-profile mobile things, Skylanders Ring of Heroes. Talking about franchises that apparently just have no end. So... you got your Skylanders and they come out of the portals, and no plastic portals this time because it's on mobile. They're just there. You collect them. This is kind of Summoner Wars.
Mm.
It's made by the same lot. It's made by Come To Us, and it looks to me like the Skylanders crew have gone, could you make us a Skylanders game based on that? Summoner Wars. I was going to say War. Summoner's Wars.
It is Summoner's War.
It is Summoners. Hang on. Because it's written here as Summoner Wars.
No.
Summoners?
That is incorrect. It's Summoners War.
I'm going to have to... That's a black mark for Harry right there.
Oh, Harry.
Do you want to fire him or shall I?
Let's do it together.
So, yeah. If you've played Summoners War, then you'll know what this is. It is the classic, you know, three people versus three people. There is energy bar at the bottom of the screen, charging up like Hearthstone. Each character has initially at least two attacks that they can use, which cost a different amount of gems, I think it is in this case. I don't know, mana, whatever the generic energy name is. And then you lay into a whole bunch of beasties, and these beasties often come in waves. As you progress further through the game, you'll get, like, you'll have to face usually two or three waves of them. There are about seven stages in each world, at the end of which you have a nice big boss, then it opens up another world, and you've played this game. You've played this game plenty in lots of different forms. Get the cards, the Skylanders themselves, level them up in ever more confusing ways. I'm starting to tire a little bit with these games of the amount of complexity they've introduced into what you can level up.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm actually going to pull this up on the phone live while we're doing this because it was irritating me slightly that, here you go, we've got the stats, and you can upgrade your overall level using potions you collect. Then you've got the skills, which you need to use power-up materials in order to boost, and each character's got up to four skills. You've got the power-up option itself, which you need additional materials to do. You've got the ability to evolve, which you need to collect puzzle pieces in this case by unlocking characters to evolve them, which will also increase their, I think, max level or something. Mm-hmm. You've got the awaken ability, where, again, it'll boost overall stats. And in order to do that, you need to combine a whole bunch of different materials like life orb and one of the card things you pick up. Then you've got runes, which you embed in each character, which you can move around. And it's like, it's getting to the point where it's more complicated than an actual RPG.
Mm.
It's like The Witcher 3. You know what I mean? Only instead of managing Geralt, it's like every single one of these characters has it. And for me, it just feels like because all of these things require materials, it's just a way to make you require materials.
Mm.
And that is a way to squeeze more money out of you, or certainly just make you keep grinding and grinding because you need this bit. And like the evolution process is never complete, which is kind of the point of these games. But I feel like I'm maybe focusing on singling this game out, but this game is by no means the only one that does this. This is a trend that's been going on for some time. It's just that this morning I've been, you know, playing it for a few hours, and it's just like I've reached the point where it's starting to get me down a bit. It's too much of this bloat.
But other than that, did you enjoy it?
Well, the stuff that I played myself was fine. Mm-hmm. As in, it's got that Skylanders license, so all the characters are there and they look good. The animations are lovely, and it's got all the polish that you would expect from something like this. They've done a very good job of it. You know, fair play. For the sake of the footage, I was doing like half of it I played myself, and then I realized there's that auto mode, and you can just press auto and let the thing battle out of its own accord, which is very good for video capture, incidentally. I'm not sure how much I would actually play the game like that. And I was playing a game last week which had this feature as well, and I was finding myself using it quite a lot because there's a lot of just thankless trudging around the world. This is AXE, Alliances versus Empires, which we did a review for. And that one, like, it's like it wants to be played in autoplay mode.
Yeah, autoplay is basically a standard in all these kinds of games now, to the point where they will be developed with that kind of in mind, I guess. Even when you consider, like, massive MMOs like Lineage 2 Revolution on mobile, that's to the point where you can just click the quest and it will just walk you to the quest, start the dialogue, then you can press the quest name again, it'll just do the quest for you.
Yeah, that's what AXE is. It's taking you across the map. The character just wanders off of its own accord.
Yeah.
And it does feel to some degree like an admission that this is boring. Do you know what I mean? Like the idea that it's going like, let me take this off your hands because this isn't really that much fun. So we'll do this bit. And then what's left for you then at the end of the day is you're the guy at the stall that your RPG hero goes to in order to sort his equipment out. Like, that's what you are. You're that NPC in Western RPGs. Because your job then becomes managing the stuff they've collected, making sure you've got the right bits equipped, making sure everything's leveled accordingly. All that list of crap I just listed out before. Making sure you've got all the elements and the things you push together and smush these cards to empower this and blah, 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 blah. And then once that's done, you just go, all right, then off you go. I'll see you in an hour when you've come back from your quest victorious. And I don't know, that doesn't do it for me.
No, but really. I have just had a brilliant idea for a game, which is just that.
Well, where you're the guy
as the
selling
NPC,
the
armorer, and people come in and go, oh, I'm going to be fighting a giant fire monster, so you have to try and equip them with fire stuff.
That probably...
Like
that's
New
not
Style
a bad...
Boutique, but with fantasy RPG elements.
That's not bad, actually. I'm copywriting this here on the podcast. That's property of Rick and James. Incidentally, I only noticed a little while ago that we are Rick James. Bitch.
I don't know who that is, but sure.
You never watched Chappelle's Show?
No.
Lots of people listening will be aware of the famous meme of I'm Rick James. No?
No, I'm sorry.
Wow. You're young. Anyway, I hate saying it, but what else do you say? If you like selling this world, then Skylanders Ring of Heroes. It's that. Skylanders in it. It's good at doing the thing that it's trying to do. It's not really my cup of tea, but shrug. Not everything has to be for me. So that's out right now. You've been playing something big, and I've seen like press for this all over the shop, but I haven't really looked into the game itself. What have you been playing on that Switch?
I've been playing Ape Out. I assume that's what you're talking about.
Yes, I am.
Yes, it is the new game from Devolver and a handful of developers, and it looks a bit like Hotline Miami in that sort of, it's top down, it's ultra violent, you've got to run around and kill everything. It's very much not, and I think it's going to lose some interest from people who are going to make that comparison.
Okay.
So basically, you play a giant orange ape, and you need to navigate procedurally generated levels, avoiding getting shot. If you get shot 3 times, you die, and you have to restart the entire level all over again.
Okay.
As you die, it zooms out, and it shows you, like, the map that you were running through and the path you took, so you can see how close you were to the end.
Yeah,
when you finally took that last shot, just go, ah, you... So, yeah. And you basically, you only have sort of 2 ways to interact with the world, if you will. So you can shove,
push enemies into other enemies, or you can push enemies into walls and they will just explode in blood and gore, and you can like shove open doors and this kind of thing. And then there is the grab, where you can take people hostage and then they sort of act as a bullet sponge for a couple of bullets and then they die. And if you don't do either of those moves, you get a little bit of a speed boost, and then you can sort of just try and run as quickly as possible to get the hell out of there.
Okay.
But what it does is it adds extra layers sort of in terms of outputs rather than inputs. So you always got the same set moves of grab and push. So every time you grab an enemy, they will panic and fire off a shot a second after you've grabbed them. So if you grab them and you quickly turn around, you can get them to shoot their fellow enemies.
Yes.
And if they've got a shotgun, you can turn around and just blast a huge bunch of people. And then there's one enemy that has like a machine gun, and he'll just let off an entire clip. So you can just spin round and take him for a walk for a bit and just kill everything in your sight. There's ones that have got bombs attached to them, so you can throw them into a group and they'll just explode and kill everybody. And what I think also elevates it is it has the most brilliant soundtrack and graphics, and just the style of it is really clever and interesting.
It looks incredibly cool.
Yeah.
I've been watching the video on loop. So when you say like it's an ape and it's top-down view, like the ape is literally just orange. No,
yes.
Not shading, not anything. It's like a moving silhouette of orange, and everything else is just like almost like it's been drawn in pastels or something.
Mm, it's very, very blocky colours. But it makes things really readable, so you know, like, that's an enemy, that's a wall, that's a door, that's where I need to get to.
And the colours keep changing and all the textures are like pulsating and
yes.
It's very stylized. But yeah, the idea of it being a defensive, almost like a defensive game, as you say, where you're just grabbing and collecting and using people as human shields rather than running around with a gun.
Yeah,
it looks frantic.
It's very much a game about trying to survive rather than it is about like murdering efficiently. Like I completed a lot of levels and I would do the bare minimum of killing because you just want to run as quickly as possible and get to the end, because that's like the fastest way to do it is just to leg it. And you can do that for basically every level, and then the game takes about 2 or 3 hours to complete, which is fine. It doesn't outstay its welcome at all. And then as you play through it, you unlock harder versions of the levels. And there's also some extra bonuses and an arcade mode that you can play through. So there's a bit of extra stuff to do as well. I forgot to mention the soundtrack. The soundtrack, have you seen Birdman?
Yes, I have. Oh, so it's a jazz?
Yes.
Oh, it's a jazz band?
It's just a drummer.
Oh, wow.
So it's like the Birdman soundtrack in that, like, even the like opening cutscenes and stuff, it will play drums as the text appears on screen. Like, and it'll be a hit, and then you'll see ape, and then another hit, and out, and that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So it's very much inspired by that. And then the whole time you're playing, it's just different drums to match sort of the environment you're going in. So there's a bit where you're in a military base trying to escape from there, and it'll start doing like military drums in the background. And every time you kill an enemy, there's a huge cymbal crash to indicate that you've just like smacked them to death. And the music itself also sort of reacts to the pace of the game. So if you're in a quieter moment, the drums will start going, and then you like you start fighting and go, like just, and it's just crazy and wild and stuff like that. It is a stylish and beautiful and fantastic. It's a little bit short, but I think it's fairly cheap to match that, which, you know, if that's what you care about, then sure. And I think some of the later levels can get quite frustrating because they start throwing in like one hit kill enemies and the levels get a lot longer, but it's still very fun and very interesting the whole time you're playing it. And so the payoff at the end, I think it's worth playing the entire game just to do the final level, which has this most fantastic payoff that I won't ruin for anybody, but is well worth a look on its own. So yeah, Ape Out on Switch, bit of jazz, bit of action, bit of violence, all sort of rolled into one.
Oh, that ticks all the boxes. That looks and sounds great. I see why everyone's getting all excited about it now. Yeah, I want that. Okay, well, back on mobile for a moment. Rolling Sky 2 Rolling Dream came out. Now, I never played Rolling Sky, the first one, but as I understand it, it was a ball auto-runner type thing, which was set to music. This one is expanding the idea further. So it's an auto-runner, like a third-person temple run type thing, but it's constantly changing, and it's all set to music. So each level is like a song.
Cool.
So it's kind of a rhythm-action auto-runner.
Mm.
Now, the way they've tried to make things a little bit different is that the levels themselves evolve quite a lot. So every level, your character is dressed up completely differently. The environments themselves are completely different. So in one instance, you're kind of running along a floaty meadow, and then another one you're riding along the back of a violin, like a massive violin. Another one you're jumping between stars, another one you're out in the middle of the desert somewhere. So they're really trying to mix things up between the worlds. And then in the songs themselves, during the 3-4 minutes you're playing the level, it changes constantly. So you will go from running along the meadow and then you'll suddenly jump into the air and this owl will swoop in and pick you up and you're flying on the back of an owl. And then in that violin level, you're suddenly running on, you know, that sheet music that they feed into those self-playing pianos.
Yes. Yep.
You know, those. You're running along that and you're trying to avoid the dots that are in the paper lest you fall through. And so it's trying an awful lot to go, hey, we're changing, we're mixing things up. Now you're riding a kind of hoverboard on the back of this snowy mountain. And so it's doing a lot of that, and it's doing it all in time to the music. And it's quite nicely presented, to be fair. We thought it was all right. I'm less keen on it in so much as I don't think it has that much replayability.
Mm-hmm.
I think the controls are a little on the woolly side, which we do point out. It's just swiping left and right, dragging your finger. It's not like a lane auto runner. You've got full like analog movement.
Right.
And sometimes it can be a little bit woolly. It's also quite ad heavy when, you know, an ad whenever you die. And I'm fine with that, provided you can unlock, which you can. But the unlock is like £5-6.
Oh.
And I'm not sure it's worth that, really. So see the video. It's one of the better, more interesting. They've clearly made an effort, you know, as an example of an autorunner. They've tried to do something different. And there's some really nice little moments in it where you're like, ooh, everything suddenly changes and you launch off into space and you're dancing on stars and the music swells. And you're like, hey, you know, this has had some thought put into it. It's got production design. But as we say in the review, still kind of just an autorunner at the end of the day. And one which doesn't have quite the same replayability. It's not auto-generated. The levels don't change. So there are different difficulty modes and everything, and obviously you need to collect stars and whatnot. But still, I'm not sure it's got enough in there to justify that price tag. But if you wanted to give it a try, Rolling Sky 2 Rolling Dream is the name of that one. There's also a couple of other things on mobile that I've played a little bit of. So Jack Quest is from Crescent Moon, and that is a classic sort of 16-bit style platformer, Metroidvania-ish thing where you're running around underground levels and you're going backwards and forwards to get the sword. Now you've got the sword, you can go and smash open the door, and now the door's open, you can get to this bit of the level, and oh, this guy needs some shoes. So you need to go back and find where the shoes are, bring them back to him, and that'll open a different thing. And one thing that I'll say, the controls are very nice. Super minimal left, right, jump, you know, type controls. Very responsive, very lovely. Rather than doing a double jump, they do that. The moment you touch a wall, you can press jump again. So it's kind of like a wall jump, but you use that as a double jump in a lot of instances, just to bounce off of stuff wherever you are, which felt a little bit odd, but whatever. So it feels very slick in terms of controls. As far as the rest of the game goes, it felt very standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 16-bit platformer with sword and hacking up lobby enemies and that. So I wasn't particularly inspired by the rest of it, but I've only played about half an hour so far. So that gets a bit of a shrug. That's available, and I think it's premium, and again, maybe £4 or £5, I think. I mean, actually, before I disparage. No, yeah, $5.99. So £5.99. I was speaking the truth. I'm always wary of saying things are overpriced, and then people will just go, oh, well, I'm not even looking at it.
Mm.
And then I've missold the game. I feel bad. But no, that is the case. There was some other stuff on Switch, wasn't there?
Yes. It came out, I think, last week, but I've been playing Car Mechanic Simulator.
Which I'm not familiar with, again.
It is exactly as it sounds. It is a game where you are a car mechanic. So basically, you go around, you buy rusty old cars, and then they're not licensed or anything, they're just made up names and stuff. And then you need to buff out the rust on them, put some putty in, give it a recolor, and then go under the hood and take out all the parts that are rusted and replace them with other parts. It's quite boring, to be honest. It's very repetitive. It never changes what you do. You cycle through the objects, you take them out, you put them in the warehouse, you get the new bit that's fresh and clean, you put that in, and then you reassemble the car, and then you sell it, and then you just move on to the next car. You just keep doing that over and over and over and over and over and over and over. But because it's so repetitive, it kind of puts you into a trance state, I guess. Like, I was playing it, and I was just sat there, and I was doing one, and then I'd finish, and I'd be like, oh, I might as well start the next one, it won't take long, and then you get into it, and then it was like an hour later, and my girlfriend's saying, can you please put tea on? I'm like, oh, well, I just started this new car, I just couldn't
buff the rust out of this carburetor.
Yeah, oh, God, I've got to, you know, swap the radiator fan out, that's going to take ages, like, Jesus. So... Yeah, it's weirdly sort of therapeutic, and it just sort of takes all of your attention and forces you to play this game. It's not very good. The menus are really difficult to get around to start with. Like, it takes you through a tutorial and then immediately goes, okay, bye. And it's like, oh, you didn't actually tell me how to do anything.
Okay. I see other people around the net are saying it's actually a bit rubbish.
Yes.
We're in the 4, 5 out of 10 territory.
Yeah.
I think sim games are tricky because one person's extraordinary tedium will be another person's like sweet escape.
Mm.
But even within the sim genres, you need to be able to, they need to be good versions of those games. I think the good sim stuff people really latch on to, like your Euro Truck and all of that,
yeah,
where not only is it, yes, it might be perceived as tedious, but within the context of the genre, it's very well done.
Mm.
And the menus are accessible and you can, you know, they do make it understandable and whatnot.
Yeah, this is not a good sim.
Fair enough. Well, Car Mechanic Simulator, that's Switch at the minute. We've got a few things on iOS that I haven't played yet. So Castles of Burgundy, which was our game that was on Steam, and it is a ye oldie Englishy Knights of the Round Table-ish board game. I don't know if it's an agricultural one. It's got dice on it and it's got hexes and I haven't played it. I think it is a bit aggry, like building up your land and fighting against other people and shrug, don't know. But that's out right now, Castles of Burgundy. Snakebird Primer came out. Now, we played Snakebird ages ago when that came out. That's quite a good little puzzler, which operates on, it's kind of like if you've ever played Snake on a Nokia 3310, where you're looking top down at your line, your squiggly line snake, and then you're turning at right angles, and the idea is to munch all the things without accidentally eating your own tail. It's like, take that principle, turn it into a side-scroller, where your snake is like snaking along the floor, and then you swipe up on the screen, and it'll go joop up at a right angle, kind of one tile. And you can keep swiping up, and it'll go doot, 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 and then you know, swipe left, and so it can go in the up, down, left, right, cardinal directions. And then you have to navigate the world like a maze using that technique. And again, obviously you'll end up tying yourself in knots and you have to find exactly the right set of movements that will guide you round the area and over that little bit there and down and through that tunnel and out the other side. We quite liked the first game. I'm not sure why this is called Snakebird Primer. Is this supposed to be like an easier version
of
it?
Yeah, this is. I think it's a new game in its own right, but it is kind of an easier game overall. The original Snakebird is supposedly super hard. I've never actually played it myself.
It's pretty tough, yeah.
Whereas this one is a much easier take on Snakebird in general.
Got you, yeah. So the description, they've said it's a more relaxed island with easier puzzles. I played the first couple of levels and I was like, yep, it's Snakebird. But I assumed it was easy because it was the beginning. But maybe this is a smart idea because it was very tough, the early one, but it was really good. So, and for some people, that is a bit of a stumbling block. So maybe if you bounced off the first one because it was too hard, this is worth a look. $7.99, £7.99, so not cheap. I feel like this is something that came out on Switch as well, the original Snakebird.
I don't think it did. It was a PC game, I think, but not...
PC, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's out now if you want to go and take a look at it. Also, Dragalia Lost came out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we reviewed this ages ago because it came out in the US yonks ago. And so you can go and check out the review. This is Nintendo's original IP for mobile, if you're not familiar with it. So it's their version of a sort of JRPG, but it's based on no former property. It's not a Zelda or a Link or a Mario or anything. It's just this thing they've created. B, it's kind of play with one thumb, third person, top down type deal.
Mm.
It's very smooth, slick and all of that. I played it a bunch during the first week because I was doing hands-on, getting loads of footage. I haven't played it since, so I'm going to assume it's developed between then and now in some way. But if you've not already played it or got hold of it, perhaps you're in the EU and therefore haven't been able to have access to US account.
It's still not even in the EU.
Really? It's still out?
It's only available... It's been released in the UK, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, those sorts of places, but it's still not available in mainland Europe.
Oh,
I guess they're still working on the translations.
Wow. All right, then. Well, yeah, so basically go and check out our review that we've already got up and the footage we've already done, and then we'll have to take a look at it once it's properly out and see how much has changed.
Mm.
But in the meantime, you can get a look at it. New Nintendo game on mobile, always exciting. Brackets, several months old. Close brackets. I'll mention that Trials Rising came out on Switch this week, though we haven't had the chance to get to that and review it, but we will be looking at that. And you're going to ruin my Google search again, aren't you? It's time. It's that time. It seems to be becoming alarmingly more frequent where Rick's been playing a weird anime game. Go on then, Rick, round us out. What's you been playing?
This one is called My Girlfriend is a Mermaid.
Yeah, and it's a question mark at the end.
Yeah, it's an interrobang.
You have to have the inflection.
you have to do that whole thing. I honestly have not played this very much, but from what I have played, it is very much up my alley.
They're advertising it on Crunchyroll. There you go.
It's a visual novel, and from what I've played so far, my character has bumped into his childhood friend and gone, "Oh, wait, oh my God, you're a mermaid." And she's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Ah, oh, that's really weird." And then she's like, "I'm going to take my skirt off now." And he's like, "What?" And then she's got the big tail. And then he said, when I closed the game just before the podcast started, he said something like, "I'm going to kiss her on the big juicy butt." And I was like, "Okay, awesome, great. I'm really glad I started playing this game."
Of copies in both Japan and Korea, gaining more than 5,000 five-star ratings, so says the Steam listing. You know what? I believe them.
Yeah, I don't have any, you know, formed opinions on it just yet, but I'm sure I will next week.
Hey, on the upside, the More Like This tab on Steam is thrown up Doki Doki Literature Club.
Hey. So,
which you presumably still haven't played.
No.
Go and play that. It's very good. You know, it occurred to me that I'm surprised all this stuff is getting published on the Switch. Like, Nintendo seemed to be chilling out a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. On the Japanese store in particular, there's been a lot of games which are straight up basically porn.
Mm.
So there's a game called A Good Librarian Like a Good Shepherd, which came out on Switch in Japan a few months back. That was just an H game, pretty much. I don't know if they're being edited for the Switch, but there are quite a few games like that, especially in Japan, coming out. And then I think because of the, you know, digital marketplace, a lot of developers are now making these English translations of it and just putting them on the Switch store. And I think they're selling okay because they keep doing it.
Steam's relaxed a little bit as well, but having this stuff pop up on a Nintendo store, it's like, really? Wow.
Nintendo's chilling out, but Sony's cracking down. And
really?
Sony's making, like, Senran Kagura, with one of the more famous anime games. Their sort of re-release of the first game has been delayed while they try and work out how to censor it a bit more, because Sony doesn't want it in its current form on the PS4. And there's been a lot of this kind of stuff in sort of the anime games where Sony wants them really heavily censored. And there's been none of that on Nintendo platforms.
They've always positioned themselves as the family-friendly lot, haven't they? And yeah, I would have thought they would have been a bit more guarded against that, but...
Yeah. You've got stuff like, you know, even when we're not talking about, you know, slightly pervy games, you've got the things like Doom and Wolfenstein 2 coming to Switch as well. Like, they're heavily promoting the Switch as an adult's console as well as being for the family. Like, it's an interesting shift, and I quite like it.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. Steady on, Nintendo. Easy there. Okay, that'll do us for this week. We will be back next week for more of your mobile-based chatter. Do tune in for that. Rate and like, if you like. I mean, I don't care where you put
it. Go to a lake. Have a nice time.
Have a right. And listen to the podcast. Then join us next week. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.